Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cut podcast. I'm Chad Young, joined as always by Pete Ball. And Pete, this is a day of celebration for you, huh? You are officially on summer break now.
Yeah, thank God I was able to grade all the final exams today. It's a long process, very long test, but I am officially on summer vacation. And the Red Sox have greeted me with a 6-0 lead over Oakland.
Oh, nice. I forgot the Guardians are about to start playing, so I got to see what's up with that. But in the spirit of grading final exams, I think we should use this episode to go back and grade ourselves a little bit. And so what we're going to do is we have each picked out two players that we were right on and two players we were wrong on going back to the offseason. And I think we'll discuss this more as it goes on, but it's probably a little early to be, we shouldn't be victory lapping just because a guy looks good so far. And it's probably a little early to be writing off guys that we were high on before the season. But I think it's an interesting exercise to go back and just think about, like, what did we see that we were excited about? What should we have maybe seen in retro? What, looking back, what should we have maybe seen that should have been a clue that we were off on some of these guys? And just sort of rethink things a little bit. And so we're going to cover 8 different players. I've got 2 guys I was wrong on. Pete's got 2 guys he was wrong on. I've got 2 guys I was right on. Pete's got 2 guys he was right on. And through that, we're also going to talk a little trade, because coincidentally, 2 of the players out of these 8 were involved in trades I am literally in the middle of making. So when we get to those players, I'll explain what those are. And hopefully by the time we talk about them, I'll actually be able to officially announce those trades, because I'm just waiting. You know that feeling when you're waiting for the other manager? They've agreed in principle and they're just not hitting the accept button on the real offer. And it's like, come on, get it through. So we'll see.
It's even worse when you message them on Twitter and you can see that they've read the message and they're still not responding. Like, oh, come on, come on.
It's killing me. But let's dive in. And I think we should start with the guys we got wrong, and then we'll flip over to the guys we were right on. We'll end on a high note. So
yeah,
Pete, why don't you go first? One of the 2 guys you got wrong, who do you want to talk about first?
Sure. So I'm going to start with Spencer Torkelson. I know he's one of the 2 guys that's involved in that deal that you were referencing earlier.
He is.
And if folks remember, when we did our first base episode, now we were ranking keepers, so I guess it's a little bit different because I still view Torkelson obviously in a highlight in keeper leagues, but I was just as high on him in redraft, to be honest with you. As we got closer to the start of the season and the lockout ended, and it really looked like, oh my God, like Spencer Torkelson is going to start the year in the major leagues. Here we go. Number 1 overall pick, awesome hit tool, tore up the minors. I was into it and I was ready for him, but he has just been terrible. He can take a walk. That's it. I mean, he's got about a 12% walk rate, and we'll take that, especially in our points leagues and in our leagues that count OBP in place of batting average. But that doesn't mean that his OBP is good, because he just gets out so much. Right now, he's not playing tonight because he's 3 for his last 38. So he got tonight off. He struck out 3 times last night. I'm worried that there's a demotion in store. And when you look at his numbers, Chad, like, if you look at his underlying numbers, and this is what one of the like little things that I prefer StatCast to over FanGraphs, because, and StatCast has the backing of Major League Baseball, it's a little bit of a difference there. But I like that StatCast will show you the MLB average right underneath, a particular player's statistics. And when you look at, and you could do the same thing for FanGraphs, you just have to have 2 different windows open. But anyway, when you look at like everything under the hood with Spencer Torkelson, like almost everything, It's literally like league average. And that's not a good thing, because we're playing fantasy baseball. Like, if you're in a 12-team league, the Tigers are in a 30-team league. And Torkelson has still been bad. But in the grand scheme of things, he's basically been like an average MLB player. So I'm going to throw out a couple of quick stats, and then I want to throw it over to you, Chad, because you were much, much, much more sobering on Torkelson than I was. He has an 88.9 average exit velocity. The league average is 88.4. His swinging strike rate is 10.2. The league average is 11.1. His hard hit rate, 35.3. League average, 35.5. His launch angle is literally league average, 12.1. There's more that we could dive into, but he's basically just been fine, which long term for him as a baseball player, I feel pretty good about that. Like, okay, you know, kid's holding his own. He really didn't get much burn in the minor leagues, but as a fantasy manager, man, it's been disastrous if you took him as a top 200 player.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like you said, I was much more, I wouldn't even say I was down on him. I was just much more cautious.
Sobering.
Cautious. Sobering. It's a good word for it. Yeah. And that a little bit, this is what I expected. And the reason I say a little bit is because I did not think he'd be this unproductive, but what you just read off of him being sort of average across the board, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. He's a 22 year old kid who has, you know, basically less than a season's worth of minor league plate appearances. And it's going to be hard to adjust, and there's going to be an adjustment period, and it's going to be painful, and it's not going to be smooth. However, I'm actually, take a step back before I get into that. You look at what he's done, and it's like, he's got a 27% strikeout rate, which is high, but like, he had a 23.6% strikeout rate in AA last year, 20.3% in AAA. His strikeout rate's higher in the majors. That's not a huge surprise. Similarly, like, his 11.2% walk rate, as you said, is very good. It's lower than it was in the minors. That's not a surprise. The biggest and sort of most surprising thing is that he was running sort of across three levels last year, a home run per fly ball rate around 20%, and his major league home run per fly ball rate is 9.3%. And that's ugly. And that's, you know, he's got a 7.6% barrel rate, which isn't terrible. He's got a 111.5 max EV isn't bad. Like, there's some good signs there. And it is worth noting that, like, his ex-WOBA is 50 points higher, almost 50 points higher than his WOBA, right? So it's still not good. A 311 ex-WOBA, it's not like if all of a sudden he was matching that, you'd be like, yes, he's everything I thought he would be. Like, that's still not good. But his production doesn't actually reflect how average he's been. It looks way worse, which is how you end up with a 263 WOBA and a guy who is, his F4 is -0.8, right? And like, he's just been, he's been awful. And but his results being that awful isn't really reflective of, as you called it, how average he's been. He should be performing much better. And I think he probably will soon. And so that gets me to my however from the beginning is, you mentioned he's one of the guys involved in these trades I'm making. Well, the initial trade I made, and I'm waiting on a second trade, but the initial trade I made, which has been accepted, was I had a roster crunch. I had an overfilled roster due to IL returns and stuff like that. And I traded a $20 Jonathan India, who I effectively didn't need. I've got a very cheap Jeff McNeil and a good price Ketel Marte, and I've got Willy Adames and Bo Bichette. And so I just didn't need a fifth middle infielder. And a $9 Lance Lynn, who, again, my pitching was deep. He was potentially going to end up being a cut for me at some point as guys came back from the IL. Plus, his velocity was down. But I traded the two of them for a Spencer Torkelson in a minor league spot where I can stash him. And I was super happy with that. Now, it turns out that there was another offer that came in, and I am assuming everything comes together. This is the one I'm waiting on. I'm going to be trading Torkelson along with Alec Thomas, who I also have in a minor league spot, for Emmanuel Clase and Josh Hader, because I need bullpen help. And like, yeah, in a league where we have three relief pitcher spots right now, I've got Tanner Houck, who I can move into a starting pitcher slot. I've got Tanner Rainey, who's been useless because he gets no saves. And I've got Taylor Rogers, who's been excellent. But if I could go from that to having Houck as a starter and my three relievers being Clase, Hader, and Rogers, I'm going to be in a good spot.
That's the best bullpen in fantasy baseball.
Right. It's as good as it gets. So, and I think what my point in this is, like, where am I on Torque? Like, I'm right where I was before the season. I think he's going to be fine. I think long term he'll be very good. I don't really want to have him on my roster this year. And so picking him up in this trade where I could stash him was going to work well for me, because I could wait till next year and then I would be able to use him when I think he'll be much better. because just not because I think he needs to make some big changes or anything. He just needs to grow.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if I get a good offer to move Spencer Torkelson, I'm fine with that too. Like, I don't, that, and that's sort of where I am with him.
Yeah, no, it's like ripping off the Band-Aid for me. This is a very cathartic episode because I was rostering him in my favorite league, a 16-team league. It's a keeper league, but you only keep three. And Torkelson's value as a keeper wasn't even that great because I was so high on him. I took him decently high in the draft. And so the draft pick compensation I was going to get wasn't going to be worth it. And I had a roster crunch. And literally just yesterday, I finally dropped him. At my first baseman's Vlad, there's no corner infield and there's one utility spot. So like he was just taking up a roster spot, hitting a .180 or whatever he's hitting. So this was a necessary venting of Spencer Torkelson, and I feel much better now.
Yeah, I mean, we have him in the Keeper Cut Listener League that we're sharing a team. And right now, the way that that league is set up, like we have to use him. He's in our lineup every week,
yeah.
Which is
small bench,
less than ideal. But we're not going to, like, it doesn't make sense to cut him because his long-term value is still high and our team has been terrible. So
right.
Like to cut him now when he's a potential long-term keeper for us just doesn't make a lot of sense. And so, like I said, I think in general, that's where I am with Torkelson is like in a keeper league, I'm still very happy to go out and acquire Torkelson at a low price and be able to sit on him till next year. But I would much rather have him out of my lineup.
Right. And he's so talented that even if you're forced to use him, he could still end up having a pretty solid second half, you know?
Well, and he did. So sort of a random thing. I feel like he got lost. And this is, you know, talking about fun with arbitrary endpoints. This is pretty arbitrary, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways. From May 12th until the first game of their doubleheader on May 31st. So I'm getting really precise here. Not even through the 31st, just through the first game of the doubleheader. That is 58 plate appearances. He had a 150 WRC plus over that 2.5 week stretch. Now, there is nothing when you look at that that it seems, at least to me, crazy in there. His walk rate was 13.8%, which is well within sort of where he's been for the season. His strikeout rate was down to 13.8%, which is low for sure, and he won't maintain that, but still. 341 BAPIP, which is high, but given his bat skills, is not crazy. He only hit one home run, so it wasn't like a big home run per fly ball thing. He just performed better for like 2.5 weeks. And then he fell apart again, and it's been a struggle since then. But he's showing those signs of growth and development. He's showing the things you want to see. So I feel pretty good about where he's headed long term. But yeah, in redraft, I'm totally happy to get rid of him. And even in a keeper league for the right price, I'll move on. I'm fine moving on. I just don't think he's not doing enough right now, and he's not going to do enough right now to make me feel like I have to sit on him. So. All right, well, I'll jump to one of the guys that I was down on. And since I already sort of mentioned him, let's talk Jonathan India. So as I said, I traded a $20 Jonathan India along with a $9 Lance Lynn to get Torkelson. India, it's probably not fair to say that I was wrong on India or too high on India as much as it is to say he's getting an incomplete so far, or even I'm getting an incomplete so far, given he only has 45 plate appearances on the season because he got hurt. However, even in those 45 plate appearances, there are some signs that are not good. His walk rate is his calling card, right? He doesn't hit the ball particularly hard. He really is reliant on a high walk rate. His walk rate on the year is 2.2%. 2.2. That's bad, right? I mean, his walk rate last year was 11.3%. So that's sort of what you're looking for from him is like, you know, double digits, not 2.2. And the problem is, the thing that sort of makes me nervous, because in 45 plate appearances, you could pretty easily just say, yeah, whatever. It's, you know, a couple more balls go his way, and all of a sudden, instead of 2.2, it's 5. And if it's 5, it's low, but you're not feeling that bad about it, whatever. However, his chase rate last year was 25%. This year, it's 36%. His zone swing rate last year was 58.2%. This year, it's 64.9%. His contact rate is up, But basically what that means for a guy who contact isn't his strongest skill, right? And I don't mean contact like making contact. I mean, good, hard contact is not his strongest skill. He's putting the ball in play a lot more. And that isn't necessarily a good thing for him, because he's at his best when he can walk and be patient and find the pitches he can absolutely hammer. Because with this increased rate of balls in play, his barrel rate is down, his exit velocity is down, his hard hit rate is down, right? And so, I think part of what you're seeing is he's getting a lot more soft contact because he's swinging more at pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. Now, it is 45 plate appearances, and so I am, you know, I'm reserving judgment on saying that this was like a huge mistake on my part. I should be out on him. The fact that I traded this $20 India has less to do with me thinking he's done and more to do with just the way that team was structured. Because in one of my auto new leagues, I have a $14 Jonathan India that I've been refusing to trade because I still believe in the skill set there. But there are real concerns when he's hitting the ball he already didn't hit the ball particularly well, and now he's hitting it less well because he's hitting it more. I think what I'm looking now that he's back, and he's, you know, literally just back, right? He's getting his first start off the IL as we speak. I wonder what's going on in that game. Let's pull that up. So we are recording this, by the way, on Tuesday, June 14th. So, he hasn't even started yet. His game is later. So we've still got another hour before his game starts. So I can't even report on what's happening. But what I'm looking for from him is chasing less, waiting for his pitch, taking walks, even taking strikeouts if that's what it comes to, in order to wait for the pitches he can really handle. And then I'll be very happy with him. But there are legitimately worrying signs, and I really thought he was going to go back to being what he was, maybe even a little better, right? I thought as he got into his mid-20s, or he's 24 last year, that he might grow into a little bit more game power, right? He's got a good hit tool. He's got a good sense of the plate, and maybe he pulls the ball more, elevates the ball more, and gets a little bit more power out of his profile than he had shown so far with his 21 home runs last year. Like maybe he gets to 25, 26 this year. And instead he looks like he's going to get to, 10, in part because he's playing so little, right? Because he missed so much time. But in part because he's hitting the ball less hard. He's hitting the ball in the air less. And yeah, it just, there's a lot that worries me.
I don't want to say I was down on India going into the season, but where he was going, I mean, even like seeing you had him for $20 in a $260 budget, obviously much smaller rosters, they're not new, but that still, I guess, feels kind of priced. Like I would have been priced out at $20 for him at that point. At the same time, for what it's worth, I mean, we're going to talk about the 49 plate appearances or whatever it was. In his rehab assignment, it was only 15 plate appearances, but he did walk 3 times. So that's a 20% walk rate. So maybe it's coming back a little bit. I mean, it's better than not seeing it, right? I mean, if we're going to look at that small of a sample size. And you just think back to the ballpark and his kind of profile, right? The less fly balls is obviously not good, but it's still a fine fly ball rate. He's about a league average fly ball guy. It's the pull rate that we want to see, because he doesn't hit the ball with as much authority as your traditional power hitters. He's your typical middle infielder, right? Softer contact. But if he continues to pull the ball in Great American Ballpark as much as he has, then maybe we do see that power pick up a little bit. I mean, we're seeing power pick up around the league right now. And who knows, maybe this extended absence due to injury has kind of rejuvenated him. I'm not out. I actually traded for him in a keeper league. I parted with a very cheap to keep Mackenzie Gore for both Matt Chapman when he was like at his worst. I mean, he's got a homer and a hit tonight. He's been heating up lately. And Jonathan India, who was like in the middle of his injury stint, and we didn't know when he was coming back. Obviously right now that deal's looking pretty good for me, and I'm excited to have India back again, because lead off for the Reds. And we think about the Reds, we think, oh, that's a bad lineup. No, I'm in on Brandon Drury. He's the one who's hitting right behind him. After that is Tommy Pham, who StatCast data loves, even though he really hasn't performed like it this season. And then it's Joey Votto. So like, yeah, the Reds stink, but if he's got those guys behind him for the rest of the year and can, amass 450 to 500 plate appearances going forward, I could see him being pretty good. I think you'll be okay with your India shares.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, again, it's just that sort of reminder that being high or low on someone doesn't mean you should definitely get rid of them or definitely have them. Like,
exactly.
It's all about what the opportunity is. And yeah, the places where I have India where I haven't moved him, I'm very happy that I still have him. And I think he will turn it around. The place where I just traded him, I'm fine having traded him too, because I think I got value that's pretty good. So that's sort of where I am on him. Let's jump over to your next guy you were wrong on. And we're gonna stay on the infield, another infielder.
Yeah, this one kind of breaks my heart because I love Alex Bregman. In my home league, I rode Bregman to two or three championships during the peak Bregman years. And I remember getting him for super cheap. I was selling one year and I was like, you know what? Why don't I trade whoever it was? I don't remember who the heck it was for Alex Bregman. And I ended up keeping him for years. Anyway, that's completely off the point here. He's been bad. So the good news is he's walking more than he's striking out, which we kind of expect from Alex Bregman, right? He's that's never going to change. He's a great plate discipline guy. He's sporting a 233 BABIP, whereas for the career he's up around 290. So I think there's room for some positive regression there. And his expected WOBA is 364. So, you know, that's really good. So there's room for improvement here. The bad, though, is everything else. I mean, 716 OPS. He has not hit the 30 threshold for runs or RBI yet. That's getting concerning. I wrote down in the notes he's pacing for about 20 homers. The projection systems have him almost unanimously finishing around exactly 19 home runs for the season. There's no way. Like, I get that the entire community after his 41 homer season was like, he's never going to do that again. But 19? That's kind of concerning to me, and he's only hitting 233. So depending on where you drafted, like on NFBC, he went right before Anthony Rendon, DJ LeMahieu, who I love, but has not performed as well as I thought he was going to, Max Muncy, Justin Turner, and Ke'Bryan Hayes. Now, Hayes is promising, and the underlying data really likes him. But otherwise, like you didn't really miss out on anything. But I guess that's kind of my point, is that Bregman went before those guys, and he's performing just as bad, if not worse, than them. And so that's a huge miss. If you drafted on ESPN, ESPN had Alex Bregman as like a third or fourth round pick, like just egregiously high. And no matter who you're playing with, when anybody sees a player continue to just stay at the top of the draft and stay at the, they end up taking him. And so he was going way higher on ESPN. And he has absolutely screwed over managers there. I don't know if the wrist is still bothering him, if it's the new balls, in which case, you know, as the weather heats up, maybe we'll start seeing the power come back a little bit. He is posting a career high average exit velocity by 0.1, but it's still a career high for a guy who's had a really strong career, and yet he's still terrible. He's putting the ball in the air a lot, and he's pulling it a lot, but he's getting very different results, and I think that speaks to, yes, he was very lucky before when he hit all those home runs into that part of the ballpark at Minute Maid that I can never remember. It's got a very simple name, but also, you know, I think the balls are impacting him a little bit. So it's a mixture of both, like the luck has run out and the other shoe is dropping where, you know, you, just because you hit a fly ball up in the air and you pull it, it's not going to be a home run as much as it was before.
It's the Crawford boxes, right?
There we go. Thank you. Yes. I'll forget it in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, no reason to know the names of seats in Houston. But I'm sort of thinking I want to buy low on Bregman if I can, because he said he's the plate discipline is where it's always been, right? And that's never been an issue for him. His fly ball rate is up, which to your point, you may not want him hitting a ton of fly balls, but it does give him a path towards power. His pull rate is down from last year, but above his career average and pretty close to where it was in his better years. It would be, I mean, it's very close to where it was in 2018. It's higher than where it was in 2019. There's a lot to like here. And as you mentioned, his ex-WOBA is high. His ex-WOBA, if he matched his ex-WOBA, he would be outperforming both of his last 2 years. And so I think to me with Bregman, I guess it, you know, as with all of them, it comes down to cost, but like he's not going to be who he was in 2018 and 2019. He's just not. Those 2 years, he had 72 home runs combined. He isn't going to come close to that. It might take him 4 years to hit 72 home runs again. But I do think he can be much more similar to what he was in, let's say, 2017, rather than what he's been in 2020 and 2021, let alone 2022 so far, which has been, you know, he's on a, it's right now, 2022 looks like a downward trajectory, right? By WOBA, he was at 345 in 2020, 336 in 2021, 321 so far this season. But by ex-WOBA, he was at 332 both of the last 2 years and is at 358 this year. So I sort of think, like I said, that BAPIP's going to come up. His home run per fly ball rate, that's at 6.9%. Like, it's just not going to stay that low. I don't think it'll get back to the 18% it was in 2019, but I do think it could get back to the 10 to 12% it's been for most of the rest of his career. And if he can do that and still be hitting high in a very good lineup, I think there's an opportunity to buy low on a guy who, I don't know. I mean, so 2020 and 2021 combined, he had a 338 WOBA. I am going to bet that the rest of this season, he's over 350. So from, let's see, this airs, we'll say from the day this airs, just because, well, we can say from today, from tomorrow, from June 15th through the end of the season, I'm going to bet on him having a 350 or higher WOBA. And if he does that, you can buy low right now and profit handsomely.
Yeah, that's a definite buy low.
I understand why you're saying you were wrong on him, given how high the hopes were and what he's done so far. I don't think you were wrong to be high on him. And I would still be buying.
Yeah, he's a guy I thought about sending a few offers for if I could buy low. I think he is still carrying a little bit of some name value. I will say, in roto leagues, you know, nobody really, unless you have Jose Ramirez, expects to get stolen bases out of your third baseman. But for a guy who had a 17 steal season, and I know that because you brought up his 2017 season, and I went to go look at it, and I was like, whoa, 17 stolen bases. Alex Bregman has attempted one stolen base since 2019. Since the end of the 2019 season, he has attempted one stolen base. I think it kind of gets lost in the, like, Anthony Rendon has two stolen bases. Austin Riley has two. Those guys might finish with 5, 6, 7. You might win that category by 1, 2, or 3. That could be important. Alex Bregman is a zero. Even Rafael Devers has a stolen base. He was eating an ice cream cone in his post-game interview the other day. He has a stolen base. Bregman has attempted one in 3 years. I don't want to spend more time on it than that, but it sticks out to me as, like, what the heck is going on there? Maybe it's a philosophy in Houston. I don't know.
So let me ask you a question then, mentioning the stolen bases, because the other third baseman who you expect or think you'll get some stolen bases from is Ke'Bryan Hayes, right? And Ke'Bryan's got 7 on the season so far. He had 9 last year in what was about a half a season of plate appearances. Like, there's reason to think he could push 20. He probably won't get there, but, you know, over 15, under 20, something like that for Ke'Bryan. He also has a somewhat similar skill set to Bregman in that, you know, plate discipline, on-base ability, bat-to-ball skills are going to be their offensive calling card more than power. With a much shorter track record, a much worse park to hit in, and a much worse team, would you rather have Hayes or Bregman?
So I'm just going to answer truthfully. Right now, I think it has to be Alex Bregman, because if somebody in a keeper league offered me, unless the price was very different, all things being equal, if somebody offered me Ke'Bryan Hayes for Alex Bregman, if it's my Bregman, I'm keeping Bregman. If it's my Hayes, I'm trading him for Bregman. With that said, man, that really, for a second there, had me thinking, because you pull up Ke'Bryan Hayes' Statcast page, Chad, and it is beat red. I mean, he has been a little unlucky this year, I'd say. And if you look at his, you know, you could say he only has 2 homers, but look at what his expected homers would be around the league. You know, if he was playing all of his games in Great American Ballpark, he'd be up at 7. Now, take that for what it's worth, and Pittsburgh is a terrible lineup to be in, and I feel bad for him that he has anything to do with that franchise. No offense to our Pirate fan listeners. They probably are nodding in agreement anyway. But yeah, that's a really Yeah, right. That's a good question, though. Hayes versus Bregman. I like it.
Yeah, I think in a keeper league, it's a tough call, because part of it, too, is like, I'm like, oh, well, Brian Hayes is so young. I mean, they're not that far apart in age.
No,
right?
Bregman's a young guy. Yeah.
Because Bregman, Hayes, you think of as being young because he's barely been around, but he's 25. Bregman's 28. That is, if I were the Astros and the Pirates, that matters to me a lot.
For
as
sure.
A fantasy manager, you're still not waiting. Neither of them are declining for a while. So I'm sort of, it's an interesting question. I think, I don't know. I'm pretty high on Ke'Bryan.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe I'm too high on him if I say I would take him over Bregman, but like they have very similar WOBAs and very similar ex-WOBAs right now, and one of them steals bases.
No, that's
so
a good point.
It is a tough, tough call. I think at this point I would trust the track record on Bregman more. I think if I'm being realistic, I would probably reject that trade no matter what. Which is basically to say, if I were in a league where I had Hayes and someone offered me Bregman, I'd probably talk myself into preferring Hayes. And if I'm in a league where I have Bregman and someone offers me Hayes, I would probably talk myself into preferring Bregman. Like, if I'm being realistic and knowing my own tendency to prefer the guys I've got, I bet that's what would happen. So,
no, that makes sense. I think if we were to redraft right now for just this season, like if we had a draft here on June 14th for 2022, I think Hayes goes first. I do.
Yeah, I think I might be right. So let's jump to my last guy I was wrong on. And that is, we're going to stick on the infield. If we move Torkelson back to third base and Bregman back to shortstop, we could build a whole infield out of the guys we were wrong on. Because I'm taking a first baseman, and that is Matt Olson. And Matt Olson, I mean, let's start with this. First base is kind of a mess. Right. I mean, if you go back and think about who we were drafting at first base before the season, and then you go look at the, you know, first base position sorted by WOBA. Right now, that's not a perfect match for fantasy value, but since none of these guys have that many stolen bases, it's close enough. But your number one first baseman by WOBA is Paul Goldschmidt, which is probably not a surprise to anyone who's been paying attention this year, because Goldschmidt's been awesome. Your number two is Luis Arraez. Your number three is Ty France. Then Pete Alonso, CJ Cron, Garrett Cooper, Josh Bell. At eight, you finally get to Vlad Guerrero Jr. At nine, you finally get to Freddie Freeman. Then you have Jose Abreu, Trey Mancini. And at 12, you get to Matt Olson. Now, if we go back before the season, the big question was, Vlad is your number one first baseman. He's everyone's number one first baseman. He's going in the first round. Freeman is a clear-cut number two. And then there was this Olson-Alonso pairing that was going next, and it was a tough call between them. And I was on the record saying I like Olson better than Alonso, and that was before he got traded. And I said, if he gets traded, I actually think Olson pushes closer to Freeman than he does to a lot. Like, he moves from being close to Alonso to being close to Freeman. That has not worked out. Alonso has been much better. Olson has been fine, but he looks a lot more like the Olson of 2018, 2019 than he does of the 2021 version. And what's happening there is a little bit hard to tell. There's a couple of things I think at work. Part of it is, he made huge strides in his strikeout rate last year. So he was a guy who, from, you know, 2017 to 2019, he was sort of in the mid 24 to 27% strikeout rate. It jumped up to 31% in the short in 2020. And then last year, he got it all the way down to 16.8%. And he did that not by, you know, chasing less or swinging less. He just made contact at a much higher rate. And because he's such a good hitter, like, this is sort of almost like the opposite of India. Olson makes such good contact that more contact is a good thing. Whereas with India, I wasn't as sure about it. This year, his strikeout rate is better than it was that 2017 to 2019 stretch, but it's 23.6%. It's basically right back to sort of where he was before that big jump in 2020 and big fall in 2021. And that, I mean, that sort of stands out as what's happened is he had a down 2020 because he struck out too much. He had an up 2021 because he didn't strike out at all. And now he's back to being what he was before. And that's fine. That's not a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with being who Matt Olson was before, but it certainly doesn't justify his draft price. And it, especially for someone like me who was pushing him up higher on the draft board. And if you look at his Statcast data, there's nothing there that makes you think like, oh, he'll be, you know, his max EV is up. He has the hardest max EV of his career. So maybe that's a good sign, but everything else is just sort of where it's been. He has a 350 WOBA and a 354X WOBA, right? Like, he's just sort of been what he is. And I think the mistake that I made, and so this is where, you know, the other guys I'm sort of saying like, oh, I think they're, you know, I said I might still buy on Bregman. I might still buy on India in the right circumstances. I'm still buying on Torkelson. With Olson, I think I just over-indexed on believing that he had changed skill. Like, I basically looked at his 2021 and said he's established a new baseline, which is not the right way to look at a guy posting a career year. And I think that what I, you know, it is totally fine to look at a guy and say, look, he completely changed his strikeout rate. He did it by making more contact, but you have to hedge a little bit. You have to regress that and say, yeah, but he's likely to end up closer to his career numbers than he is to what he was for that one season. And I think I made a mistake in effectively saying 2021 is who he is. And if he gets out of Oakland, he'll be even better. Instead of saying 2021 shows what he's capable of and getting out of Oakland might be enough to keep him there, but more than likely he takes a small step back. And as a result, instead of having sort of equal shares of him and Alonzo, which is probably what I should have had, I've got a lot more Olson than Alonzo, and that hasn't been great.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a really good reflection of what went down, but it's so tempting to get excited about the park change because it was Oakland, which is a pit. And both of these players that we're comparing here, and we've been comparing for a while, and other podcasts have as well, they both had the same noticeable difference, and that was what you brought up, the change in strikeout rate. And it was like, man, this guy's becoming a complete hitter, not just a massive bopper. Alonzo has stayed within 1% of the gain he made last year. And obviously, like you said, Olson has not. The big difference I'm seeing, and who knows, is this impressing? You know, is this him trying to live up to the contract, to the trade? He's filling the shoes of a Hall of Famer that just won the World Series. I mean, there's a lot at play here. But the fly ball rate is way down at 22%. And so, like, maybe that would be good for batting average, right? If he's hitting ground balls and he's hitting them so hard. But if I'm a Matt Olson guy, I want him hitting the ball in the air. And I think it's a combination of all of those factors. And I'm going to kind of say what you said about Bregman. I'm ready to buy low on Matt Olson if someone's willing to sell. I think it's different for Olson because with Bregman, people were maybe taking him in like, I don't know, he was ADP 88 on NFBC. So what's that, like a sixth, seventh round? Olson, I mean, he was going in like the third and fourth round. That's a tough guy to buy low on.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there are reasons. There are absolutely reasons to buy low. I know I cited that his WOBA and XWOBA were really close, but a couple of things that stand out to me as reasons to buy low. One, you already mentioned the fly ball rate, right? I think, you know, he's not a guy, this isn't a guy who like had 1 year of a higher fly ball rate. And so like, you don't know if he can do it. His fly ball rates by year were like 47.1, 46, 43.1, 44.6, 44.3, 43.7. And then all of a sudden this year, it's 35.5. Seeing that go back up to the mid-40s would be not remotely surprising, and it will lead to more power. So that's one thing. The other is he is right now running a 61.1% first pitch strike rate. That is a number that is usually not very sticky. It's very volatile. And so a guy running a very high first strike rate will likely see regression towards a lower first strike rate. And he has been in sort of the 53 to 55 range for most of his career. And the things that impact first strike rate outside of just noise tend to be like, you know, hitters who are free swingers get fewer first pitch strikes because they're like fewer first pitches in the zone because they're more likely to flail at something. And guys who are not scary tend to get more first pitch strikes because pitchers are like, I'm going to come after this guy. And if he gets a hit, he gets a hit. So be it.
That's not Olson.
Olson is not that, right? Neither of those are Madison, right? So like, I expect his first strike rate to go down. The difference league-wide, the WRC plus from 0-1 counts is 67. The WRC plus from 1-0 counts is 129. So it's a huge difference if all of a sudden one out of every, even if it's 5%, one out of every 20 of his at-bats flips from a 0-1 to a 1-0. That's a huge difference in his production. And so I think that'll all change too. So I agree. I would still buy in on Olson. However, I still think I wouldn't buy in on him at the price I was paying in the offseason because I just think I was just too high on him. Just too high.
Chad, I think you need to explain to Tony La Russa how the likely outcome of an at-bat changes if you are behind in the count. God.
I don't even want to.
By the time this airs, will he be fired?
Yeah, no, right. He won't. But he should be. He should be fired before, like, he should have been fired.
He never should have been hired.
Right. Yeah. Anyways, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. You can listen to our sponsor and think about Tony La Russa's ridiculous intentional walks, and then we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Pete, we've gone over four guys that we got it wrong on. Now let's, you know, I don't want to say take victory laps, but let's take some victory laps here.
Yeah, no, I'm excited.
I'll let you take the first lap.
Okay, all right. I mean, I'm not very good at taking victory laps. I'm often very hard on myself, but this season has gone really well for me. I'm leading my TGFBI league right now. That's been flipping a lot. So, you know, first, second, went down to third for a little bit. And I'm leading another money league I'm in. It's a RotoWire qualifier. I'm leading our Fangraphs listener league too. So, I mean, for somebody who started this by saying I don't victory lap a lot, I seem to be doing a lot of victory lapping. But a common denominator between a lot of those leagues that I'm doing very well in is Sandy Alcantara, who has just been absolutely positively incredible. So much so that, like, he has to regress a little bit. And I'll talk about why I think he's going to do that. But there was, like, some stuff on Twitter, and this is going to sound like a straw man argument, and I didn't get involved because I very rarely, if ever, get involved in, like, Twitter beef. But it was, like, some pretty hot takes about Sandy Alcantara. Like people saying, like, he's barely a top, I don't know, 30 starter. Someone said, I can't remember who it was. Man, it seems like such a straw man argument. Somebody said he's the fifth starter in Miami. What? I'm sorry, come again? And I couldn't disagree with that more. And when I was on the corner with Nick after we did our, you were in this draft too, our mock draft, it was very early on before we had any rankings to base them off of. I can't even remember when this was. It had to be like December. I took Alcantara there, and Nick got me even more excited about him. And Nick obviously knows his pitching. And so it's just worked out. I mean, I have Alcantara, I'm in 21 leagues. I have Alcantara in like every other league. I had him ranked eighth early on when we did our starting pitcher rankings, but I must have just kept moving him up because I ended up with him like everywhere. I had some hope that he posted a 27.4% K rate in the second half last season when he like really took off. I mean, he was unbelievable in the second half last year. That hasn't really carried over. That's at 23.4, but you take that with the good, right? If you're in a K per nine league, then that does hurt you. But otherwise, I mean, he's been everything that you hoped. You know, I love my ground ball pitchers, Chad. He's fifth in ground ball rate. He's third in ERA. He's third in expected ERA to back that up. He's first in innings pitched in a time where it's tough to get decent innings pitched out of most of your starters. Second in quality starts, only behind Joe Musgrove and one other guy. I can't remember who. But basically in every major statistic, he's up there. Now, I mentioned you should expect a little bit of regression, partly because like nobody pitches this well. Like other than Jacob deGrom, who's not pitching right now, like nobody does what he's doing at the moment. At least not anymore. I think he's had three straight 7+ inning starts. Nobody does that anymore. He has a 245 BABIP. That's probably going to go up a little bit. His strand rate is over 80%, and it's just a 5.3 home run to fly ball rate. So when you take, if his home run to fly ball rate is only 5.3, and he barely gives up fly balls to begin with, he's hardly given up like any home runs this season, and that's going to be a very difficult thing to maintain.
He's given up four home runs.
Four home runs and leads Major League Baseball in innings pitched. He leads MLB in innings pitched and has only given up four home runs. That's ridiculous.
Gave up five in a start.
Oh, dude, I watched that start. We talked about it last week with Matt. Like, that was the worst start I've ever seen, besides Daisuke Matsuzaka. Anyway, he has thrown his changeup more. I haven't read anything about that. I just noticed it, and it has been unbelievable, but all of his pitches have been really strong. So I don't know if that change is going to stick. Maybe by the end of the year, the sinker's first again. I don't know. Bottom line, he's not a sell high to me. Even though I just suggested he could regress a little bit, he's a hold. He is an ace, bona fide ace, victory lap complete.
Yeah, I honestly have nothing to add to that. He's been awesome. And I was not as high on him as you, but I heard the same things. You know, you made the comment about it's going to feel like a straw man. Like, I heard the same things you did about people being like, I don't know why he's going this high. Why are people so excited? Like, and I didn't buy into that. I just wasn't as high as you were. And my experience was that every league I was in, somebody had him as like a top 5 to 8 starting pitcher. And so even if I had him as like the number 12 starting pitcher, I never got him. But you did. And you were right. I mean, that's it. That's like the people who had him that high, they were just right. So yeah, nothing to add. I'm gonna jump to another starting pitcher. And this is a less, I'm gonna victory lap less hard on this, but before the season, I was pretty high on Shane Bieber and sort of frustrated by the number of people who were down on him. And a big part of that was I really thought that the velocity drop he suffered at the end of last year was, he was like two starts that were effectively rehab starts. He couldn't do minor league rehab starts because there were no minor leagues by the time he came back. It was just like a couple of starts. He was rusty. He was just trying to work his way into shape. And I thought people were reading way too much into it. I also thought that he is a very, very good pitcher with great command. And that even if his velocity wasn't what it should be, he could still pitch well. So I was very wrong about the velocity. His velocity is actually like, it's down from where it was in those late starts last year. And that is obviously a real problem. However, he's still pitching really, really well. He's pitching right now as we speak. He's gone two innings with three strikeouts and a walk, two hits, no runs. That takes him down to a 2.82 ERA and a 2.61 FIP on the year. So, you know, we're talking about Alcantara, and Sandy has a 1.68 ERA, but he has a 2.97 FIP. As good as he's been, Bieber has a better FIP than Sandy Alcantara. Now, there are reasons to be a little concerned, I think, with Bieber. One is the velocity is in fact down, right? I mean, it is, and you can't ignore that. And as much as I want to say he's the kind of guy who could overcome a loss in velocity, which I believe, it's still down, and that's still bad, right? So, like, I can point to, you know, Zach Greinke all I want as a guy who, like, lost velocity and still was successful with the lower velocity, but, like, he was better when he could throw hard. There's also, I think, right now, Bieber, like he has a 2.91 ERA, or sorry, coming into the day today, he had a 2.91 ERA. He has a 3.55 xERA. So xERA is a Statcast based ERA, right? It's what you expect their ERA to be based on things like their barrel rate, their hard hit rate, launch angle, stuff like that. His launch angle would be a career high right now. And he has never been a guy who avoids home runs particularly well, but his home run per fly ball rate would be a career low by like half, right? His lowest home run per fly ball rate for his career coming into this season was 12.1%. He is at 6.3% this year. So it's a pretty significant drop, and it's just unlikely to continue. And so for him, like then I start to look at like his XFIP, which is 3.25, which is sort of like, okay, let's assume he regresses in home run per fly ball rate. But I even think that might be a little optimistic because I think that his batted ball data does not suggest a league average home run per fly ball rate. It suggests an above average home run per fly ball rate. And so I think he's likely to be more of a mid threes, 3.4 to 3.5 ERA type guy the rest of the way. And so because of that, I don't know that I would say he's necessarily like, I don't know that he's a sell high in terms of like, you have to aggressively like get rid of him. Right. But I would sell high. However, I would also buy low on him because I think the talk track on him is still pretty negative because of the velocity issues. And so for me, my overall take on him is like, I think he's a buy and a sell. If you're in a league where someone drafted him expecting 93 miles per hour and Cy Young candidate, and now they're like, man, I'm not going to get anything like that. I'm just waiting for the bottom to fall out. Without this velocity, he's done. And you can pay for him like a mid-rotation starter, do it, because I think he's way better than a mid-rotation starter. However, if you're in a league where the person who thought that, you know, is so someone's looking at his current line and saying he's got an ERA under 3, he's striking out over a batter per inning, like everything looks good, and this guy is a, you know, borderline Cy Young contender. He is better than Sandy Alcantara because that's what the numbers are telling me. I would sell. Like I would sell to that person if I could. So that's where I am with Bieber. I feel vindicated in supporting him. Maybe it's just, you know, my Guardians fandom coming through, but I'm very happy where I drafted him. I believe he's going to be a very good pitcher for a long time to come. I don't think you need to go ahead and get rid of him, but I don't think he will be as good as he has been so far this year. I think there's a little bit of regression coming. And if you can sell him as if what he's doing today is going to stick, then you should.
I agree with essentially everything. And I've been rooting for Bieber along the way. And, you know, you look at some of the stuff that, well, some of the first things that I like to look at for starting pitchers, obviously swinging strike rate is there. It's not where it was, right, when he won the Cy Young in 2020. But it's still very good. And it seems like outside of velocity, that's kind of where Shane Bieber is. I would also caution our listeners, if you pull up his Statcast page and kind of have the sticker shock, is that what they call it? I don't know what it is, of what his average exit velocity against is. He's a guy who's always gotten hit hard. It just hasn't mattered as much. Chad referenced the trouble he's always had with home runs, and that's true with the average exit velocity against as well. I've got Bieber in a few spots as well. Mostly long-term leagues, like stuff where I already had him from previous years. I can't say I drafted him that much, but bottom line, you were right, because if you've had Shane Bieber to the point of this podcast, you've basically gotten ace production. You've gotten a really strong whip over a strikeout, an inning, and an ERA under 3. You really can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, agreed. So let's jump to your last victory lap here. I know you saved this guy for last on purpose, because I know you want a victory lap hard on this. And yeah, we talked about him very briefly last week, and talk to us about Jazz.
Sure. So it's not going to be as hard of a victory lap as you'd think, because like, I don't know, all the negative talk about him, and I don't mean from you, I just mean in general, like kind of got to me going into the season. But because it's Jazz Chisholm, and he was actually another guy who was oddly ranked on ESPN, where like, I'm not going to go down this hole again, but basically ESPN's rankings were for points leagues, and they applied that to all of their drafts this year for some reason. And so Jazz Chisholm was a post 200 pick. So like, obviously anybody's going to take him there. Aside from ESPN leagues, I still ended up with him in quite a few spots. He's a guy who, ever since he got called up, I loved him. I thought he was awesome. We all knew the raw tools were there. I like that he plays with a chip on his shoulder. I like that, like, he doesn't like Zach Gallen because that's who he was traded for. That just, like, speaks to me. That's like my sports fandom at heart right there. And he has just been simply unbelievable. He had a terrible slump for a little bit. He was in a bit of a rut not too long ago. I don't know, probably about a couple of weeks ago. And he broke out of it with a couple of multi-homer games, I believe. Full breakout. He's the number three second baseman and the number four shortstop on ESPN's Player Rater. Now, the Player Rater does highly favor stolen bases, but most of us play in roto leagues, and stolen bases are, you know, they're a part of that. They're important. His barrel rate, like, let me give you some crazy stats about Jazz Chisholm in comparison to studs around the league. His barrel rate, you know, actually, let's start with his expected WOBA on contact, his ex WOBACON. It's better than Rafael Devers, Bo Bichette, Kyle Tucker, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and Juan Soto. His barrel rate is better than all of those guys I just named, as well as Yordan Alvarez and Shohei Ohtani's. His expected slugging is better than Jose Ramirez's and Mookie Betts, and we know the seasons that those two players are having. Basically, the only superstar I didn't name there is Aaron Judge. Jazz Chisholm has been up there with everybody. He's chasing a little less, swinging in the zone more, but that hasn't had much of effect on his walk rate or his strikeout rate. Those are pretty consistent, but he's probably going to finish somewhere between 25 and 30 homers, 20 to 25 stolen bases, a survivable batting average because the strikeouts are still there. But, you know, anywhere from 160, I'd say, to 170 runs plus RBI. He has posted a decent RBI total, despite not even really playing every day, because he still randomly gets benched. Jazz Chisholm has been awesome, and I'm very excited about my Ottenew $8 share in our league, where I roster Vlad and I roster Machado and I roster all sorts of guys, and yet he is leading my team in slugging percentage, which is one of the eight categories. So he has been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that his, you mentioned his O swing and Z swing. I think that the thing that stands out to me is the big concern that I had, that everyone had with Jazz, was like, does he have any approach? Does he have any sense of the strike zone? And the fact that he's chasing less and swinging in the zone more, even though his contact has gone down, and I have some concerns because both his O contact and his Z contact are down, and that's, you know, I'd be worried about that. He has a higher swinging strike rate this year than he did last year, but the fact that the adjustments he's made are to chase less and attack the zone more, it says so much about what he's working on and where he's improved. And so it helps to calm my biggest concern with him. And so, yeah, I mean, part of me wants to be like, oh, he can't maintain this. There's no way this continues. But, like, what part of it? I mean, his home run per fly ball rate is high. It could come down, but, like, he's crushing the ball. He's earned that home run per fly ball rate, right? This isn't just a guy who's, like, gotten lucky and the ball's happened to carry a couple of times. Like, he is smashing the ball. You mentioned that barrel rate. It's insane. So, I don't know. His BAPIP is 276. He seems like a guy who should run a high BAPIP. He hits the ball hard and he's really fast. So, like, man, I'm just, I have big regrets about not buying in before. And now I, like, he almost feels like a buy high. He almost feels like if you can pay for him at what he's doing right now, you just should. Because if he continues to make adjustments and develop, and if his BAPIP ends up running hotter because it seems like it should, like, maybe he's got more. I don't even know. So, yeah, I was wrong, and I'm super impressed with what Jazz is doing.
Yeah, a fun trade before the season even started. There were some other pieces involved, but I essentially traded away Jazz Chisholm for Shane McClanahan. And I feel like somehow that just worked out great for both me and this other manager.
Everyone's real happy with that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a win-win right there.
Yeah. All right, we got one more guy to talk about. Another second baseman, sometimes, most of the time. I was pretty high, and I've been pretty high for a couple of years now, on Jeff McNeil. And Jeff McNeil had that just absolutely stellar breakout 2019. He had a really rough start to 2020 and then bounced back late in 2020 and ended up with a pretty solid season. And then fell off the earth last year. And I basically said, like, look, you know, maybe he doesn't return to sort of the rabbit ball performance of 2019, but I bet he can be very close to what he was in the rest of those solid years, right? His 2018 and 2020. 2018, he had a 368 WOBA. 2020, he had a 360 WOBA. This year, he's at 357. He's basically been exactly what he was other than that 2019 craziness. And what's interesting is, in some ways, this is like the opposite of what I did with Matt Olson, right? With Matt Olson, I was like, oh, he had one terrible year and one great year, and the great year is going to stick. And here I was like, yeah, McNeil had a great year and a terrible year, but I think he'll just sort of be who he's been for his career. And that's sort of what's happened. There's not even worth going through his stats, because it's just, he doesn't strike out a lot. He walks a decent amount and he hits a lot of line drives. And that's sort of what he's always done, and it's what he's doing again. Now, my concerns with him, and I do have some concerns with him, is there are just, the biggest one is there just won't be very many home runs. He doesn't hit the ball that hard. He is unlikely, like right now he's running a 4.8% home run per fly ball rate. I think that will go up because it's just so low. I think it almost has to, but like, he's never had a barrel rate over 4.4%, right? So right now it's 2.2%. That'd be a career low. I think it'll be better than that by the end of the year, but I don't know. There's a lot of his numbers and his X stats are down by X WOBA. This would be his second worst year of his career. His hard hit rate is down. His max EV is down. His average EV is down. Like, there's a lot of ugly there. But I think at the end of the day, I still think he'll sort of be what we expected him to be, which is high average, very high on base, limited power, limited speed, but he should score a decent number of runs and have a decent number of RBIs hitting in that lineup. And so to me, he's very format dependent. So the league that I mentioned earlier, where I traded away India and McNeil's one of the guys I have, he's sort of my fourth middle infielder in that league right now. That league counts doubles and triples as the sixth category. It's an on-base percentage league, and doubles and triples is a category. I think he's going to get me a ton of extra base hits with a high on-base percentage and like I said, good number of runs and RBIs. In auto-new leagues, where, again, extra base hits matter and where you're counting on-base percentage, I think he's going to be good. I think he'll be very valuable. I also, like, he plays middle infield but also qualifies in outfield. And so in five outfield leagues like auto-new, or in, like, the CBS league I mentioned is a head-to-head league with pretty shallow benches. And so having bench players who can be moved around to different spots of the lineup makes a big difference. So like, there's a bunch of things where his value sort of is boosted by stuff. In a traditional 5x5, you're talking great average, a decent number of runs and RBIs, and nothing else. And that is, you know, that might be worth selling high on right now if you can, but on base percentage leagues that those doubles and triples have value above being a hit, I'm in. I'm very happy with McNeil, and I think he'll just sort of keep being what he's been.
Yeah, I love this call. McNeil's been a beast. Like the walk rate is one thing, but he's still, because of the batting average, posting a super high OBP at 372. And so you're right. I mean, it is kind of format dependent. But even in your like standard 5x5s, like, he's been very valuable for me because of that batting average. And if he's going to get on base that much in the lineup that leads Major League Baseball in runs, that's second in Major League Baseball in WRC+, that just adds value to him. So I'm all in on Jeff McNeil. And if you did listen to Chad in the offseason and you were able to get McNeil in your keeper leagues, well, now you're looking at a situation where you're not going to have to pay much to keep him. Or if you got him in your odd new leagues, like, you're not paying much to hold on to this guy, and he's going to be a pretty steady performer, I think, going forward.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, he's also a guy who, if Major League Baseball changes the ball again, like, he'll benefit as much as anyone if power surges. And so, yeah, I'm real happy with that. But that's our episode on, you know, admitting our mistakes and savoring our victories.
It's our progress report.
On both sides. Progress report. Yeah. That's a very teacher description. This isn't a fun. We haven't done our final grades yet, but you know, we finished the first trimester, and we need to sit down and reflect on what we've done so far, and you know, get ready for the rest of the school year.
This is a much more fun school year.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned your students discovered the show, huh?
Apparently, so they have.
If any of Pete's students are out there listening, thanks for listening. I would tell you to like do something to him in class, but school's over, so
yeah, school's not over, and we are way too technical, I think, for eighth grade fantasy baseball players. So they probably started it, heard my voice, were like, "Whoa," and then turned it off. But either way, okay.
Well, if any of you stuck with it this long, you should let Mr. Ball know, because he'll be very impressed with you. So.
Absolutely.
They probably did. They call you Mr. Ball, huh?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Tell him my middle name is Bass.
Well, with that, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this. We will be off next week. Pete and I are both traveling, but we'll be back at it in early July. Make sure you follow the show at Keeper Cut on Twitter. Subscribe wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Leave us ratings and reviews. You can follow Pete at Pete B Baseball. You can follow me at Chad Young. Hope you have a good start to your summer. I know Pete's going to go off, celebrate the beginning of summer break right now. And like I said, we'll be off next week, but we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Have a good one.